Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Kawaski.
Welcome to the Social Network Show. This is your host, Dr. J, and Jim Nico is with me today in the studio at KUNV at the Greenspoon School of Urban Affairs on the campus of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And today, if you are trying to help children or teens navigate the new connected world we live in, our guest today has important insights. And his main insight is that all we need is a new mindset. His message is simple. We need the mindset that our digital actions are public and permanent. That is the golden rule for the 21st century. His name is Rich Gary. He is the founder of a nonprofit organization, the Institute for Responsible Online and Cell Phone Communication. For short, IROC 2. Throughout the 1990s, at the height of the technological revolution, Richard served as an interactive marketing executive. In his tenure, he encountered the darkest areas of the internet and discovered countless individuals unknowingly being manipulated and schemed and their content being stolen and exploited. As a father of two young children and an avid user of digital technology himself, he decided to make a change and start a new revolution centered on technology, digital consciousness. Rich, thank you so much for coming. Welcome to the Social Network Show.
Oh, thank you so much for the privilege. It's great to be here.
And thank you so much, Rich. And Jane did not mention that she's an experimental psychologist, but I always like her too, because this is the social networks, as you know, or they seem at least to me like some grand experiment.
Okay.
So.
Well, let's do it. Let's experiment.
Right. Well, the thing I noticed about your live event, which I was alerted to by Carol Todd, mother of Amanda Todd, she told me this wonderful guy is going to be in Las Vegas. And so I went over to the Bishop Gorman High School to hear your event. And we met there. And you kindly gave me a copy of Public and Permanent, Creating a Mindset That Our Digital Actions Are Public and Permanent. It's a wonderful little book. And I wanted to know how was it that you got here from where you were in the executive world?
Yeah, well, I'll try and keep it as succinct as possible. Long story short, when I was doing web marketing, and I had been doing that for many years, at the time I had a consulting firm, and one of the clients had to do with juvenile safety, but more travel safety. School in South Jersey called up, and this is back in 2009, and they said, hey, would you come in and talk to our kids about sexting? We're having a big problem with sexting. I actually thought it was a prank call because I had never heard that term before. And so after a couple of conversations, I realized this wasn't a prank call. This was a serious thing that was going on. And while the company, you know, the juvenile safety company, didn't have anything to do with internet safety, that's ultimately how they found me. And so after a few conversations, it wasn't that far from where I lived. I was like, you know what, why wouldn't I do this? But I went into that school, and after talking to the kids, and I made it very clear, I wasn't going to talk about a trend for 60 minutes. Because we hear about a trend like sexting. Well, you know, it takes thousands of people to get into trouble. Then we slap a label on it, and then we sensationalize the issue. But lots of people had to get in trouble first to create that issue. And so I said, well, I'm not going to stand here and just talk about a trend for 60 minutes, because how would that help anybody in the room to avoid becoming the victim of the next inevitable challenge when new technologies and forms of technologies come out? And so I just wanted to talk to them a little bit about how to be responsible with digital tools and what they were created for. When I left that school, I started doing research. Well, you know, what's out there for teachers and kids and parents? Because it's one thing to hear about a story on the news. It's another thing to see it happening in somebody's eyes, the pain and the frustration. And I really wasn't happy with what I was finding out there as far as what was, you know, going to help especially a child be preventative. And so just after, I don't know, a week or so, however long it was, I decided that I was going to do something different. So I stopped marketing and just completely walked away from the corporate world and launched a nonprofit. It was called it is called the Institute for Responsible Online and Cell Phone Communication. We go by IROC. It's just easier. And, and so since that time in 2009, I have just pretty much dedicated my life to not only running this organization, but speaking to people of all ages across the country to help at least give them information about technology so that if we are going to make mistakes, and humans do, at least we're making an informed decision. We're not making a blind decision. And I think a lot of the problems that we have today are because people are using technologies with a false or expectation of things like privacy. And so that's, you know, what I call blind decision making, because they don't realize what can happen if they do what they're about to do.
And hence the urgency of realizing whatever you communicate is, you should assume that it is going to be public and that it will be permanent, correct?
Correct. So, I mean, public and permanent is the basis for what I call a digital consciousness. When I started in 2009, I didn't want to be, and I didn't want our organization to be just another quote-unquote cyber safety organization. I really wanted us to be something different, something that helped teach people how to use any digital tool, because that's what they are, they're tools. How to use any digital tool through time responsibly. And so it was, to me, what I called having a digital consciousness. And having a digital consciousness means you are conscious of or aware of what digital tools were created to do. And what all digital tools were created to do was to give humans the incredible power of instant knowledge and instant communication. I mean, that's why we all buy them, love them, and use them. And so public and permanent comes in. It's kind of the foundation for having a digital consciousness because it's a preventative guideline. It's not meant to say that every action we take will absolutely be public and permanent. Just like playing with fire can burn. If I fool around with a match for 5 hours, it does not, or a lighter for 5 hours, it does not mean I will get burned. But as we use tools or abuse tools, our risk goes up. And so if I apply a mindset of public and permanent when I'm using a tool for sharing, then I'm never going to create something that I'm not okay being shared, because I would be prepared for that to happen. And so it's really a very important preventative guideline to make, you know, to help us stop and give some pause. I bought this tool so I could talk to my friends, so I can get my work done instantly. I can share content. I can save content. So am I okay with what I'm about to create with that same tool being shared or being saved, public and permanent?
So helpful. Interesting how Jane drew the conclusion, or at least the analogy, between you and Dr. Elizabeth Englander, because we've had so many people on the show and at expert level, et cetera, who talked about safety or other aspects of social networking that they were concerned about. And there is that link between you and she, in the sense that you're in the preventative thinking that you put out there. Dr. Englander said something one time that stuck with me forever. She said, you know, it's a very different scenario when a kid hears his parent or a parental figure say, these are the risks on social networks. In other words, here's the flame. You may or may not get burned, but here's the real risk. And then the other side of it is where a parent might not say anything or point out the dangers of that flame. And there's a big difference. Wherein we're in an atmosphere or a time when so many parents have given up because they know they can't keep the kids off the networks.
Right. And, you know, it's unfortunately, you know, when we talk to parents, you know, what I try and help them understand is, you know, a lot of parents feel like they're overwhelmed. They don't know the technology as well as their kids do. And so they throw up their hands sometimes, or they just feel like they're drowning. They can't keep up. And what I try and help them understand is, you know, offline, we don't try and keep up. What we do offline, and it doesn't matter if it's fire safety, sexual health, drugs, alcohol abuse, driving a car. What we do is stranger danger. We give guidelines offline. Don't play with any, you know, don't play with a tool that uses heat or fire. You can get burned. Don't talk to any stranger anywhere at any time because I might never see you again. We give these guidelines because we can't be with our kids 24/7, just as our parents couldn't be with us 24/7. But we give that guideline praying that they'll make a good decision based off of knowing and having that guideline reinforced. But for some reason in the digital world, because technology is rapidly evolving, it's almost ironic because technology is one of the things that's moving faster than anything else on this planet, and yet we have people trying to keep up with it. And what we try and help parents understand is you can't keep up with it. But while you can't keep up with it, what you can do is try and install a guideline on responsible use. So whether you allow your child to have a digital tool or not, whether you allow them to be in social media or not, if they are going to go there with or without your permission, will they at least have a mindset to understand how to be responsible? And far too many people are just saying, don't do it, don't get on this, don't get on that. And, you know, I know when I was a kid, the first thing my parents said, don't touch the stove, you know, what was I going to do? Well, why shouldn't I touch it? And I touched it. What we'd rather say is, look, you need to have an understanding of how to use these tools. And that, and, you know, and again, it comes down to our prevention process or our preventative mindset of, if you're going to use it, are you okay with what you're about to do becoming public and permanent? And what we try and help parents understand is, you know, I'll give you a quick analogy. If we tried to teach stranger danger the same way as some parents try and keep up, and not just parents, but, you know, teachers too, trying to keep up with the Joneses, if you will, keep up with technology, this is what it would be like trying to teach stranger danger, applying the methodology of keeping up with technology. You would have to go and follow a kid around every single day and say, don't talk to the stranger at the park, mall, beach, Disney, aisle 4, 6, 8 at Target, aisle 10 at Staples, aisle 12 at Lowe's, aisle 15 at Best Buy. Every day there'd be a different scenario and a different situation because you're trying to keep up with every single possible scenario of stranger danger. Uh-huh. And that's basically what we're doing with technology. Isn't it easier to just say, please don't talk to any stranger anywhere at any time. Don't overshare personal information because I might never see you again.
Right. Sort of the overall, the fundamental, the foundational thing that we'll cover every most, at least, the vast majority of specific instances. That's an excellent point and takes a lot of pressure off parents because they are, you know, we all feel overwhelmed because there's this constant pressure on developers and engineers to come up with something new every second, and it's just overwhelming the whole population. So we'll talk more about what are some of the specific safeguards that people can use, especially on their cell phones and with the computer, when we come back for the next segment.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
I'm Kelly Keller, an intellectual property attorney specializing in internet law and social media issues. Join me on The Kelly Keller Show right here on the Social Network Station. Together with my guests, we will tackle tough legal problems presented by the ever-increasing use of social media in everyday business. Through dynamic conversations, we will discuss your rights and responsibilities in the new media world so the hard work you have put into developing your brand, business and products does not go to waste. How does the law's response to the social media explosion affect you? Join me on The Kelly Keller Show to learn more.
Hi, this is Jane Karwoski, an experimental psychologist and host of The Social Network Show, where my co-host Jim Nico and I ponder what social networks are doing for us and to us. The impact of the internet on human society rivals that of the atomic bomb and the nuclear age because they have fundamentally changed the ways humans interact. No matter what your networking goals are, you'll hear something for you several times a week as we analyze and comment on the state state of the networked, connected world we live in. Practical advice from the top business and marketing mentors, attorneys, and others combating cyber harassment, and experts on women and girls empowerment will help you make your social networking the best it can be as we promote service, safety, and sustainability amongst online social networks. Please join Jim and me, Dr. J, at thesocialnetworkshow.com, on iTunes, on Stitcher.com, and for our live broadcast on Sundays at 5 p.m. on KDON at 7:20 a.m. on your radio dial.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show, where we are speaking with Rich Gary, and he is going to be giving us some suggestions on how to deal with the threats, the issues presented by social media for yourself and your kids, if you happen to be raising some. And he is the director and founder of the Institute for Responsible Online and Cell Phone Communication. You can find him on Twitter at @MyDigitalSafety. Welcome back, Rich.
Good to be back.
And what can we go into here with regard to social media, and what are the biggest issues that you see?
Yeah, I mean, social media is a free and powerful tool, and there's a lot of pros and there's a lot of cons, just like any tool, a car or heat. And when people use it the right way, they can open up a great deal of opportunity for themselves. You could obtain a scholarship, a job. You can learn something new. It's really an amazing tool that connects all of us. But unfortunately, a lot of people are abusing social media as well, and they cost themselves a number of challenges. And you know, one of the biggest reasons that we see so many issues with social media is simply the false expectation of privacy. That is, I mean, when I was going back before about making an informed decision versus a blind decision and how we try and help people make informed decisions, so if they are going to create a challenge for themselves, at least they're being fairly held accountable. But I can't tell you in a week how many times I either see in the press, all of us do, or in person, somebody who winds up in a lot of trouble or facing a very serious challenge based on their actions in social media. But the reason that they're paying that price and facing that challenge is because they truly believed that what they put into social media would stay quote-unquote private. And so what we try and help people understand is, look, please don't ever have an expectation of something called privacy in something called social media. I mean, if we just want to go right at it, if you just take a look, and anyone who's listening, think about the definition of the word social.
Mm-hmm.
Now think about the definition of the word private. Those two words could not be more opposite, right? I mean, conceptually, they could not be more opposite. So here's the billion-dollar question. Why is it there are so many people on this planet that have an expectation of something called privacy in something called social media? And there's a couple of answers there. The first one is insanity, right? What did Einstein tell us? Insanity is doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. How many times have everyone, all of us, everyone who's listening, how many times have we heard, going back to MySpace when it was big, you know, let's go back a decade, over a decade, how many people have we heard about or seen that got into trouble because they put something in social media that they didn't want to get out and it got out? And yet, even though we have seen this as humans happening for over a decade, we still have people today in 2014 that expect something called privacy from something called social media. And one of the biggest reasons or the biggest problems there is the false expectation of privacy was set when they were called privacy settings. What they should have been called is what they really are. And what they really are is transparency settings. Because all we do when we're in social media is our absolute best to limit our transparency. Social privacy is completely impossible, and it always will be. And the reason for that is because digital tools and technologies, it's why we all bought them, love them, and use them. If you really think about why you have a phone or an iPad or any kind of digital tool, the reason we bought them is so we could instantly talk to someone and instantly know something, largely.
And put and something out there.
Advance in technology makes it easier for us to communicate, easier to share, not just easier, but faster. So even if we patched up a hole in privacy right now, for every hole in privacy, and again, I'm talking about social privacy here. It's important we understand the distinction between social privacy and, you know, me and a bank account, me and my numbers is far different than me and, you know, 600 of my best friends, you know what I mean, in social media. But it, you know, if you take a look at every single digital tool, if we patched up all the holes in privacy today, well, tomorrow there's going to be 100 more, because every new evolution of technology makes it easier for humans to share.
So it's much easier and much more effective and sensible to change the behavior at the source.
Correct. I mean, exactly. One of the biggest reasons that people will learn, you know, learning the hard way is simply the time that we live. We're part of something that's very, very special. There's a few points in history that are more special than others, and we're all alive during one of them. It's called the digital renaissance. I mean, you and me, everyone listening, we are part of something amazing that most people really haven't really stopped to consider. You know, we get through our lives, we do what we need to do to get through the day, every single day. But too few people have taken a step back to look at what's really going on. And what's really going on is one of the most amazing times in the history of this planet. It's called the digital renaissance. You and I, we are the forefathers of the 21st century. I mean, it is an incredible time to be alive. We are walking, talking, breathing on the planet Earth at the turn of the 21st century. We are walking, talking, breathing on the planet Earth at the dawn of the digital age. Every time we buy those new iPhones, iPads, Samsung watches, Google glasses, every time we buy something new, we are not just witnessing history for future generations, we are writing it. When our kids, you know, they get older, they have kids and grandkids, future generations. When our kids and grandkids are sitting in history class, they're not going to be learning about the Renaissance with Michelangelo and Da Vinci. I mean, that's going to be like a one-week side project.
Uh-huh.
Our future generations are going to be learning about the digital Renaissance. Their Michelangelo and Da Vinci is Steve Jobs, Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates. And what are the worst myths, worst perceptions in the history of mankind? Is that we, basically, the cavemen and women of technology, because that's what we all are.
We were seemingly
dropped overnight into a digital world. And we were told, we were not asked, we were told, sink or swim.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are swimming, but a lot of people are sinking. And the ones that are sinking are creating the data, research, and statistics for future generations to learn from. And what future generations will learn when they're in history class is that as the first, and that's just the microcosm of society, the first group of people in any situation, they have to pay the price for future generations. And as the first in the digital generation, the cavemen and women of the 21st century, well, they'll discover that we believed in one of the worst myths in the history of this planet, which is that we could have something called social privacy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to be that hard to learn that. If anyone is interested in how they're going to learn that, well, just look at the news every single day and how many people get into trouble with technology and look at why they're getting into trouble.
Right.
It's almost always because they took a tool designed for instant knowledge and instant communication. They went into a platform designed for sharing called social media, and they tried to use it socially.
And thought it was going to be private.
That's right.
Right. It's a mutually exclusive concepts. But it is very hard to learn. You know, I'm not sure why. Do you have any thoughts about, you know, why this is hard to get into our heads?
Yeah. Well, I think it's just because we're the first. And as the first, you know, what I often say is, you know, the Surgeon General's guidelines, we see that on tobacco products. We see that on a lot of products
mm-hmm.
today. But how many of our ancestors had to get hurt first to create that data, research, and statistics so that those labels, those guidelines could be created and placed on that packaging? We can look at concussions. Today in schools, you see posters about concussions and the seriousness of concussions. We see players in the NFL suing the league. Why? Because the early players, they had to get hurt and create the data, research, and statistic for future generations to learn from. Today's athletes. That's just the way we go. And so whether fair or not, we are moving forward so quickly, so rapidly with technology. And we have a lot of people that are just basically paying the price. They're by default becoming the consequences, because we are the first ones here, the first ones in the digital age. We are creating the data, research, and statistics for future generations to learn from. We're basically the cavemen and women of the 21st century, and we operate what I call the 21st century flame, digital tools and technologies. And every day we're discovering together the promise and pitfalls of what we should and should not be doing with it, so that future generations, they'll never have to learn the hard way. Just as you and I never had to learn fire safety the hard way. Now, don't get me wrong. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. You know, you never touched the hot stove twice. I know I did, right? But when I touched it, I had a guideline. I just chose to ignore it. I made a poor decision with information. But far too many of us today, as the early adopters of technology, the first ones here with technology, we're getting into trouble. We're quote-unquote burning ourselves but a lot of times it's because we weren't given a guideline. And that is what we at the Institute are trying to change.
All right. Thank you so much, Rich Geary of the Institute, which is at iroc2.org, correct?
Yep, IROC, the number 2.org. That's right.
Okay. And thank you very much for helping us create a mindset that our digital actions should be, or will be, inevitably will be public and permanent. Therefore, we need to act accordingly and speak and tweet and share accordingly, knowing that if we don't want to do something, that we don't want to be public and permanent, potentially at least. Thanks a lot, Rich.
It's my pleasure. And if I could just add one final thought to that.
Please.
Remember, public and permanent gives everybody great power. You know, playing with fire can burn. That's a lesson that humans understanding that have helped us harness the power of heat and fire, and that sparked human progress. When our ancestors first discovered the flame, they probably thought it was very scary, and a lot of people got hurt, burned, and killed. And then based on learning from others' mistakes, we were able to harness that element, and it sparked human progress. It's important that everyone, especially parents who are afraid of technology, understand that anyone, kids, adults, doesn't matter where you live anymore, doesn't matter how much money you make anymore. If you have a digital tool and you apply a mindset of public and permanent, well, you're limitless. You can do anything. And so it's important that we understand that that guideline should never be seen as a wet blanket. It should be seen as power, as the evolution of playing with fire can burn. And it's my hope that, especially our youth, because they are amazing with technology, they will take that guideline and they'll run with it and they'll do something amazing for themselves.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Rich.
All right, take care.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media, coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on The Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.